youth, and traditional outdoor pursuits. It's a national trend reflected here in Maine. Fewer young people taking part in traditional outdoor activities such as hunting, fishing, and camping. The number of youth hunting licenses fell 40% in the years from 2002 to 2017. Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is working to change that. Last year, the department hired a new hunting recruitment officer who has created programs targeting youth and young adults. Other organizations, including Maine's Youth Fish and Game Association, the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, and 4-H, are also exploring new ways to engage more young people. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We'll explore the reasons behind the decline in participation in traditional outdoor activities and learn about the efforts to get kids active in the great outdoors. Next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Outdoor activities such as hunting, fishing, and camping used to be a bigger part of growing up in Maine. Nowadays, many young people are not as involved with these traditions. Today, we'll learn about efforts to keep kids engaged in the great outdoors. This show is part of Maine Calling's continuing coverage of rural issues in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Katie Yates, is with Maine's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. She is the Recruitment, Retention, and Reactivation Coordinator. And Matt Dunlap is Maine's Secretary of State. He's also founder and one of the founders and vice president of Maine's Youth Fish and Game Association. He also writes a column for the Northwoods Sporting Journal and is former executive director of the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Did you grow up actively involved with hunting or fishing? Have you taken your kids? Why or why not? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. Matt, some people only know of you as Maine Secretary of State, but being an outdoorsman is a huge part of your life. Tell us how you got involved in the outdoors. Was it from childhood on?
It pretty much was. I grew up on a farm just outside of Bar Harbor, and my parents were not outdoors people. They moved to Maine from Chicago in the early 1950s, and they had a small business and a farm. And I was the only kid that was really interested in this stuff. And I got my interest the traditional way, which is going to the library and reading books about adventurers in the outdoors. And they paired me up with a fellow who was a professional fur trapper, and because I was interested in that. And I followed him around for years. And I don't think I've ever had a more formative experience in learning about the outdoors than those years I spent with this guy named Skip Leach, who's now passed away. But I learned probably more about the outdoors at that time than anything else I've ever done since. And it actually informed the work I did much later on in the legislature on the Fish and Wildlife Committee. And then later on, as being a representative from Old Town, Old Town's a great outdoor community. And we were talking about having a fish and game club again. There used to be one that had gone by the wayside years before. And as we talked about it, the focus kept coming back to kids. And Dave Georgia was the local game warden, and he said, "You guys keep talking about kids. Let's make it a kids association." And it took off from there, and it's been very, very successful over the last 20 years.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this sort of from a philosophical point of view. Why, from your personal experience, why is it so important for kids to have these experiences?
Well, it teaches us a lot about ourselves. And being in the outdoors, you learn a lot about self-reliance. You learn a lot about working with other people. And you also learn the importance of conservation and how everything in the outdoors is integrated together through the entire food chain. Everything matters to everything else. And there's no better way to learn that than to actually be in the outdoors and engage in things like camping, hunting, fishing, hiking. Any of those things really help you commune with the nature that surrounds us.
Katie, I understand your position is relatively new at the department.
Yeah.
Tell me why the department created this position and what your goals are.
Yeah, so the R3 program is a nationwide effort. So a lot of states have hired, almost every state has hired an R3 coordinator. It is a
The R3, I'm going to interrupt you. Recruitment, yes. Retention, and reactivation. Okay,
yes.
Go on.
Yep, yep. A lot of R's, the mouthful. So we say R3. So it's in response to declining participation in outdoor recreation, in particular hunting and fishing, but it also focuses on all types of outdoor recreation. So paddling and shooting sports, hiking, just getting outdoors in general, because we have seen a decline in that. And so I think it's a focus on getting people back reconnected with the outdoors in a more strategic effort. So looking at license sales, approaching it with a modern marketing effort, and following up with surveys and data analysis.
I could guess, but I'm going to ask you all, because you're the professionals, why are these numbers falling down? Why are kids not getting into these traditional pursuits?
Yeah, so there's lots of reasons. A lot of people's go-to knee-jerk reaction is technology. So kids are too addicted to their phones or looking at their iPad or playing video games, and so it's really disconnecting them from nature. And that might be true, but I think that in general, people are having a hard time getting outdoors because they don't have time. I think time is the number one barrier. And if you're looking at kids to get outdoors, you have to look at their parents, too. If their parents not getting outdoors, then the kid doesn't have somebody to teach them, to show them, to have that social support to get reconnected. So if people aren't really having the time, they're too busy going to work or whatever, you know, they just don't have the ability to get out there.
Okay, Matt, anything you want to add to that?
Well, that's exactly what we see with the club. I mean, we see a lot of people who send their kids to the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association because both parents work full-time, sometimes multiple jobs. Their kids are interested. They may have fallen away from it simply because they get into the working world and they get a car payment and a mortgage payment, and those things have to take priority. And Katie's right. I mean, technology is often blamed. Kids are competing, have a lot of competing for their attention, not just technology, but also school, sports, their own work obligations. People are entering the workforce earlier now than they used to, and they don't have the same access to the outdoors that we had when we were kids.
So let's talk about some of the efforts to change that. What are you guys doing?
So we have the same kind of programs that we've offered. We help with conservation camp, 4-H shooting sports, Camp Northwoods, Hooked on Fishing programs. But we're also starting to have a more beefed up effort based on surveys and data. So looking at age groups that we see declining, millennial demographic, they have young kids. So trying to target people who are in their 20s and 30s so that maybe that they can bring their kids. It's a family effort. Trying to come up with some interesting and new programs that support people who already have an interest. So if you've taken hunter safety, for example, and you didn't purchase a license, how can we get you from that interest phase to being able to go out and feel confident? There's a lot of pieces to that and a lot of different partners who need to get involved to get someone from that point where if they've never gone hunting before to actually going out and doing it themselves. And we're trying to come up with some workshops and some creative ideas to help those people.
I'm looking at you, Katie, and you are in that demographic,
I am guessing,
the young people in their 20s and 30s. And also, you're in the demographic in that you did not grow up hunting. And so you're trying to reach people like yourself.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And let me just back up a little bit and say, how do you reach this generation, many of whom don't eat meat, for example?
Yeah, and I actually didn't used to eat meat. I was vegetarian for 10 years. I was vegan before that. So I'm one of those people that I don't think I was disconnected from nature. I definitely grew up in a family that went camping and hiking and spent time, a lot of time outdoors. We went camping every summer. It was a big part of my childhood. But I definitely had a disconnect with hunting. I just didn't have that. It wasn't part of my growing up. So I think that we have to kind of approach it a little bit differently than we have in the past. It's not just programming one and done, where you have a family fishing day and then you never follow up. I think there's a lot of effort that we need to do online and using the platforms that people use and feel comfortable using. People are on Instagram and they look to Instagram influencers for, ways to, aspire to be outdoors. And so if we can reach them with that and get people excited about being outside and excited about maybe disconnecting then from their phones and technology, I think that that's kind of the way that you approach that.
I'm looking through my paperwork here at an article I read this morning that was interesting. And Matt Dunphy at the Wildlife Management Institute has a quote. This is an article from Outdoor Life magazine, and he says, "Hipsters want to hunt, but they don't want to hunt the way a rural farm boy from Illinois wants to hunt. They don't want to dress the same way. They don't like focusing on antlers. They don't like taking pictures of their animals, but they want local, sustainable, ecologically conscious meat."
That's true, yeah. But and looking at the field to fork movement, that's kind of a big piece, taking that route where you're looking at sourcing your own food. It's part of this like slow moving, getting back to nature, gardening, people raising chickens. They want to be sort of connected because our society is so disconnected because of this, you know, we're awash in technology. We're working a lot. Millennials are very stressed out. Their attention's divided. And so when they're able to get back to things, I think that's why the craft beer movement is exploding in Maine, because there is that element of you being responsible for the thing that you're creating, and it's local and it's part of your community. You know, I actually met somebody when I took my hunter safety course who was a chef who was not interested in hunting at all when he first came to Maine. And he was a younger guy, started getting into shooting sports because of the people that he worked with. And then they're like, "Hey, if you like to cook, you should go hunting, because there's all these different resources out there, and you can really, you know, add another level to your cooking experience." And he was like, "That is a great idea." So he took his hunter safety course.
Matt, tell us a story about somebody young that you've worked with.
Well, you know, and just to double down what Katie's saying, I mean, what we really push at the club, and with all the other organizations I work with youth and the outdoors, it's really the experience and the skills development. It's not the outcome. You know, I have gone out hunting sometimes years on end without ever putting anything in the freezer, and I've never felt like I was robbed of anything. It's always a tremendous experience, and that's what we try to convey to the kids as they learn the skills around, say, firearms handling, how to properly manage a campfire, reading a map and a compass. We've even taken kids to the university to go to the planetarium to learn about, you know, astronomy and things like that. But when we are putting these events together, you know, we're always, as a board, we're all volunteers, and we get so focused on the details, make sure we have enough bait for the ice fishing day, all the traps are rigged and ready. We have people there at 5 o'clock in the morning to start drilling holes, because there's a lot of people in my group that truly believe that if you're not drilling holes in the dark, you're drilling them too late. You know, so, and we have, even though like the ice fishing day doesn't start till 8 a.m., they show up at 5 and 4:30. So we get really focused on all the logistics. And I was working at one of the camps, the ice fishing days. I was working in the kitchen helping cook hot dogs, and I needed a break. So I went down on the ice just to help some kids. And there was a family that just moved to the Bangor area from the Midwest. And they had this 11-year-old girl who we had to like jump up and down the ice to show her it was safe. We had like 14 inches of ice, you know. So we get her out in the ice. I drill her a couple holes, show her how to rig the trap. And, you know, she wasn't too sure about this ice fishing thing. She stood way back from the hole and was like looking at it like somebody's going to come leaping out at her. And then the flag went up and I showed her how to set the hook. And she pulls in a 14-inch brook trout and her eyes were like pie plates. And she, you know, she like hovered over that hole. She caught another nice fish, too. And, you know, at the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association facility, which is out in Township 32, Middle Division, sounds very exotic. It's actually about 20 minutes out of Old Town. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is an incredibly generous partner in stocking that pond and making sure there are fish there for the kids. It's kids only fishing. But they get to have those experiences. And a lot of the kids that have come to our summer camps where we do everything, map and compass, how to recover a swamp canoe. The programming changes every year. And, you know, we've now started an award called the Founders Award. Jim Wilson started it. He's our camp director, for the kids that have gone every year of summer camp. And so we try to shake it up and do something different for them every year. But that's what we try to convey to them, is that every day is an adventure. And it doesn't always necessarily end up with something in your freezer, but it's always fulfilling.
Well, joining us on the line now, Mary Ellen Deschaine. She's Chief of Outdoor Operations with the Girl Scouts of Maine. Mary Ellen, thanks for calling in.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
You know, we've talked about a national trend of fewer young people getting involved with these outdoor pursuits, but I understand you are seeing an opposite trend with the girls you work with.
We are. Girl Scouts has always been about the outdoors, both here in Maine and throughout the country. But we offer summer camps and year-round outdoor activities. And this past year, we had actually a boom in our summer camp resident summer camp attendance. They're, you know, just for girls. So we had about 130 more girls just decide they wanted to come to camp. And similar to what Matt is explaining, we teach a lot of outdoor skills at our camps. We've always tended towards that rather than sort of the new and shiny thing. And a lot of our emphasis is on girls just being comfortable in the outdoors, you know, not being afraid to stand out among some trees and listen to the wind blow and not be, like, freaked out that something's going to happen. Enjoying the benefits of nature, you know, just feeling safe in nature. And I'll echo what the other people have said about, you know, screens do dominate everyone's lives, whether it's our phones or our streaming television and all of that, and the competition for family time is definitely huge. But Girl Scouts, of course, is one of those organizations that parents can sign their girls up for and give them a lot of outdoor experience that perhaps the family doesn't have time themselves to provide. We do have, over the last few years, we've been increasing our offerings for families. Family camping is an option, and that's another way to get kids, you know, used to being out in the woods. As a movement throughout the United States, Girl Scouts of the USA has partnered with North Face on some very interesting adventure activities, higher adventure. There's been a lot of outdoor badges that have been renewed in the last few years, archery, hiking, paddling, climbing. So definitely it is it's in our wheelhouse to, you know, keep children out of doors. We think of the stewards of the environment, as someone mentioned earlier. It's hard to shepherd your environment if you're not out in it, if you don't know what it means to see things, beautiful things be destroyed or neglected. And we also teach many of the things that Matt is talking about, map and compass, various kinds of water safety, and a lot of our skills and a lot of the skills that people would use in Maine are, in the end, kind of individual skills. Even if you do them with people, other people, they tend to be things like canoeing, kayaking, hiking, things that as an individual you can enjoy for your entire life. You don't need to be on a team or in a group, and that, I think, is really powerful in a place like Maine that has so many gorgeous places to be. But, you know, you don't have to be in a club to do it.
Mary Ellen, thank you so much for calling in. And we'll put some information about the Girl Scouts programs on our website. That's Mary Ellen DeShane. She is with the Girl Scouts of Maine. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from some more guests. Also, we'll have your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Roosevelt Campobello International Park, a legacy of friendship between two great nations, free and open to the public, FDR.net, and Maine Community Foundation, where you can create your own charitable fund to benefit Maine. Learn more at MaineCF.org.
China's President Xi Jinping talks a lot about the Chinese dream, which sounds pretty different from the American version.
We Chinese like harmony. Like we want everything to be balanced or, you know, like that kind of zen.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, taking stock of modern China on its 70th birthday, plus the latest on the House impeachment inquiry this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Season 4 of High School Quiz Show Maine is coming up. The program brings together high school students from all over the state to test their knowledge in the areas of science, math, history, current events, and pop culture. We're now looking for teams to take the qualifying test, which will come up later this fall. Following the test, the top 16 teams will take part in an on-air competition on Maine Public Television this spring. For more information about the rules, the schedule, and exactly how to sign up, visit mainepublic.org and be watching Maine Public Television Thursday evenings at 8 o'clock as we rebroadcast last year's season.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, getting Maine's young people involved with traditional outdoor activities. Joining me in the studio, Matt Dunlap, who is Maine's Secretary of State and founder, one of the founders of Maine's Youth Fish and Game Association, and Katie Yates, who is Recruitment, Retention, and Reactivation Coordinator with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. We invite you to join the conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, George Smith, already well known to our listeners, a lifelong hunter and angler, former director of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, longtime columnist for the Kennebec Journal, and outdoor blogger for the Bangor Daily News. Thanks so much for calling in, George.
Well, you know, Jen, I could fill up the rest of the show with my story. So I hope you're prepared.
Well, why don't you tell us, George, how you spent your childhood years?
Yeah, I feel very lucky to have grown up in the 50s and 60s in the town of Winthrop. I basically lived in the woods. Nobody worried about us. All by myself, I would hike deep into the woods by my house and fish a little brook, and I'd bring enough trout home to feed my whole family, and my mom always praised me up. And, you know, kids today, they don't go into the woods. They certainly don't spend the day there. And then my friends and I would grab our fishing rods and get on our bikes and drive all over Winthrop and Reedfield to fish. I haven't seen a kid on a bike with a fishing rod in decades. I hunted with my dad 56 years, and that was very special. I especially love rabbit hunting. We raised beagles, and we hunted rabbits all winter. It was a lot of fun. Every place we hunted rabbits now in winter, there's a house. And, you know, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, it isn't just hunting and fishing either. In elementary school, a lot of us brought knives, and we'd play knife games at recess, and most schools today, kids can't even bring a plastic knife. And then in high school in the fall, I'd bring my shotgun and leave it up back of school, and of course, back of our room, because after school, I'd hunt in the orchard up behind the school, and, you know, today that's a felony. And then at age 13, I had three jobs. I mowed lawns. I sold my 4-H vegetables at a table in front of Wilson's Dollar Store where my dad worked. And I even worked in a store. My favorite job was roasting the peanuts and cashews, but eventually they discovered I was eating all the profits.
Well, George Smith, tell us from your perspective, what is being lost if it is not resurrected? What do young people learn from hunting and fishing and those sorts of activities?
Well, I think the wonderful part of it is just being outdoors, in the great Maine outdoors, whether you're hunting or fishing. And part of the problem, I mean, parents today are very busy. They certainly don't have time like my dad did to take me hunting and fishing all the time. You know, we were constantly hunting and fishing my whole childhood. And me and my friends did the same thing. And, you know, we'd be gone all day on our bicycles and nobody worried about us. You know, and today it's all different. I started walking to school when I was 4 years old. A whole mile, I walked through a busy intersection, across a railroad track, all the way through downtown Winthrop, and nobody worried about me. I mean, everybody knew me. My funniest story was the very first day of school. When we went out for recess, I thought school was over, and I walked home. My mom was pretty surprised to see me.
Good thing she was there. Before we let you know, go, George, I know Matt wants to say something to you.
Well, George is describing a world that, you know, many of us grew up with. And I think that, you know, this is exactly what we're talking about, is that that's not a world that's really available to kids today because they have so many other things competing for their attention and so many other different stresses than we had. When I was a kid growing up on the farm, my parents worked at home. And, you know, my mother was home every day when I got home from school. And you don't see that as much anymore. You know, and I know, George, in your experience, talking, you know, listening to you tell stories about hunting with your dad and, you know, do you think that that's something that we can ever recapture?
I don't see how, Matt. The world has changed so much for kids. You know, it really bothers me that kids have to do drills now to be prepared if somebody comes in to shoot up their school.
Yeah.
That's horrible, man.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and so they're not comfortable out in the woods like we were, and wandering all over the place with their fishing rods or even working, you know. There's a state law now, and when I was 16, I worked in cotton woolen mill, and I mixed the chemicals, they dipped the wool in, and I drove a front-end loader. Now today, the law allows 15 and 16-year-olds to work, but there are strict regulations. For example, they can run the cash register in the bakery, but only if everything's baked in a different room. Now, mm-hmm. Don't they think kids go into the kitchen, you know?
Well, George, it is such a delight to hear from you, and I'm so glad you were able to call in. That's George Smith. Many of you, thousands of you listeners know George, a longtime voice for Maine's Great Outdoors. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to go now to Ron Fournier. There we go. Got it clicked in. Hi, Ron, director of UMaine's 4-H Camp and Learning Center at Bryant Pond. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for having me on.
Your camp has all sorts of programs for different outdoor activities. Tell us what's offered and what the goals are.
Yeah, there's quite a few options. So I work for the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and within Extension there's four camps, Bryant Pond in Bryant Pond, Maine, Tanglewood in Lincolnville, Blueberry Cove in Tennant's Harbor, and the newest is Greenland Point up in Princeton. So we're kind of scattered across the state. And the mission is really, this conversation is inspiring because this is really kind of right up our alley with a lot of our programming. And I hear what George is saying, you know, things have definitely changed. But I'm really hopeful that there's a lot of good things going in the right direction. And we know that, you know, we're going to have to adapt to a different climate with, you know, busy schedules and, you know, kids' days being so scheduled now. There's not a lot of unstructured time in their schedule with sports and school and everything else. But we're seeing the trends across all four camps actually with increased enrollment.
Mm.
The last 10 years, Bryant Pond alone, we've doubled in the number of campers for summer alone, and we now have created a four-season programming where we have schools, you know, coming in and out in the shoulder seasons. We do things throughout the winter and whatnot. And really, the core of the programs are conservation education. And, you know, early in the question, conversation, I believe Matt was talking about, you know, getting that connection to the kids, and really, it's really giving kids a reason to care. You know, if they're going to go out and fish and they want to catch fish and have clean water to do so, they start to learn a little bit more about their environment and why, you know, invasive species matter or water quality and things that they can do to improve that. If they get out and they hunt or hike or mountain bike, they've got a reason to start thinking about the trails and the ecosystem, and they have a direct conduit and an experience that they can take away from that really, I think, it sets the hook and, you know, gives them the buy-in. I think the biggest thing here is it can change, and it can go in another direction. I've worked with Katie with the R3, you know, initiatives with the state, and we have to think differently. We have to not so much, you know, focus on the one and done, the fishing derbies, the things that we do that, you know, we introduce somebody, but that's the only, you know, that's the takeaway. We have to support them. We need adults that can, designate some time and can mentor kids, whether they're our own kids or just getting involved with a scout troop or a group of kids in some capacity, and we got to stick with them. We have to mentor them along, give them new experiences, new challenges, and it comes right down to kids are going to do what they're exposed to. It's my belief. If you don't at least introduce something to a kid, they're not going to know it's even there. You know, listening to George Smith, I was kind of taking a walk down memory lane here. I'm a bit younger than George, but, you know, I had those freedoms of, you know, exploring the backwoods and every wild place in my neighborhood, and I lived in a small town, but you know, that time spent just using my imagination, being outdoors, and then kind of learning kind of firsthand was exciting. It was, you know, every day was a new adventure. But for me, I had an uncle that took an interest in seeing me hunting and fishing and started me off at the age of 10 or 12, and I remembered him, you know, investing the time and took me duck hunting for the first time, and I sat in a canoe in the dark, and I felt like I had just discovered a new planet.
Mm.
And that moment, literally, it changed the path in which I, you know, I'm on now, and it's a major focus of my work.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for calling in. That's Ron Fournier. He directs the UMaine 4-H Camp and Learning Center at Bryant Pond. We're going to move on to Alicia, who's calling from Teens to Trails. Hi, Alicia. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you, Jennifer. This is Alicia Hayburn, and I am the executive director of Teens to Trails. And we work across the state to help support and start outing clubs in Maine high schools. So a couple of the points that previous speakers have brought up are related to the barriers that we try to break down, and one of those is time. And by operating within the school setting, the environment where the teens are already congregating and helping to support a club that the child can join with their peers, with their friends, be supported by their teachers, we really hope to reduce isolationism.
Sure, and there's a big growth in outing clubs, right? I mean, we've got nods here in the studio. More and more schools creating them, Matt.
Absolutely. Alicia's right. I mean, this is one of the things that we've seen just within our own little universe. And I think Ron probably touched on it too. But, you know, the kids are also the leaders here, because I did not build the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association. It was actually a community effort, and the most important part of that community are the kids themselves. And we have a youth board. They come up with their own activities. They developed a winter camping session that they did it all themselves. They do their own fundraising. They come up with their own activities. They plan them and they execute them. And I think things like the outing clubs that you see from Teens to Trails, as well as the 4-H groups and Greenland Point and our organization, the communities will be there for the kids if the kids show an interest.
But I also think, you know, kids who go outside have a tendency to do better in school. So if they are able to integrate outdoor activities and curriculum into programs and schools, I think they tend to see that the kids have a better connection to the information that they're learning. They tend to perform better because they were able to get outside and get some, you know, burn off some energy, and they have better health and wellness in general. And we offer nature of teaching programs to teachers to help them integrate this. So that's, you know, there's a lot of competition for teachers to get squeeze stuff into their curriculum. So we want to help them do that.
Thank you for calling in, Alicia. We're going to go to Jen calling from Rockport. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for taking my call. I run a program called Sundog Outdoor Expeditions here in the Mid-Coast, and we offer programs for kids from Belfast all the way down to Tennant's Harbor. And one of the unique things about our program is that it's targeted at middle school kids. And we really believe that exposing kids to the outdoors at a young age is really critical in how they can develop a sense of self-esteem and comfort in the outdoors, which leads to a lifelong, you know, love of being outside.
Jen, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about Sundog. And I invite you and anybody else with an organization to go on today's Facebook post for Maine Calling and add something into the comment section, maybe with a website or something like that. We have an email from Christine. I'm a writer who is closely involved with youth programming and teaching kids outdoor living skills. No discussion of youngsters in the outdoors should overlook the Junior Maine Guide Program, established in 1937 by the Maine State Legislature. It's a joint effort of the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife and the nonprofit Maine Summer Camps, which supports youth camps in Maine. Since its inception, sorry about that, almost 2,800 youngsters have been certified as Junior Maine Guides, demonstrating proficiency and skills ranging from canoeing to shelter and fire building to compass and map use to axe and knife skills.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great program. And I think that's one of the great things about Maine. I'm not from Maine, moved here a little over a year ago. And just the wealth of resources that we have and the ways that people can use those resources to make a living for themselves and to vacation here without having to go very far. I mean, I can go just a couple miles down the road and go canoeing and kayaking and fishing and go for a hike with my dogs. And there's just so much to do here. It's amazing the resources that we have.
And the kids, I think, too, embrace this stuff in a major way. And getting back to what, you know, Mary Ellen was talking about with the Girl Scouts, the scouting groups are huge here. And, you know, we work with scouting groups. And again, it's the same goals to not only teach skills, but also the overarching skill of self-reliance. So they can do like what George was describing, being able to go out after school and do something in the outdoors that does energize them and prepare them for almost anything. And remember, Don Fendler, who the famous subject of the of Lost on Mount Katahdin, was a Boy Scout. That's how he learned his survival skills that got him off that mountain after days. And I think that's something that allows parents to worry a little bit less about their kids if they have those outdoor skills that they learn.
Well, we are going to take another quick break. We're talking about youth and the great outdoors and traditional sporting pursuits. More of your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Martins Point Healthcare, dedicated to providing the highest quality care and coverage to the people of Maine and New Hampshire, offering Generations Advantage Medicare plans. Learn how you can enroll at generationsadvantage.com. And Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com.
Hello, I'm Jane Wales, host of World Affairs. By most measures, there are now 25 fewer liberal democracies than there were at the turn of the millennium. Next on World Affairs, we'll hear from Larry Diamond. He's the author of the new book, Ill Winds, Saving Democracy from Russian Rage, Chinese Ambition, and American Complacency. He'll discuss the political reforms needed to secure democracy.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock, here on Maine Public Radio. Heard enough news, love classical music? Perhaps our Maine Public Classical station is just what you need. Never heard about it? Maine Public Classical has a presence in seven areas around the state. Portland, Bangor, Waterville. Also in western Maine, in Fryeburg. On the southern coast around Booth Bay and Brunswick. One down east, and also now in many areas of York County. Where and how to find Maine Public Classical is at mainepublic.org. Classical music is timeless, whenever you have the time. Maine Public Classical.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Young People and Outdoor Pursuits in Maine. Joining me, Katie Yates with the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Matt Dunlap with the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association, and yes, also our Secretary of State. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. I must say the lots of calls are coming in. We'll get to as many of them as we can before the end of the program. Joining us on the line now, John Holyoke, outdoors reporter with the Bangor Daily News. Thanks for calling in, John.
Hey, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
I understand you have a new book coming out about your outdoor experiences, and I'm wondering, what message do you have for young people today regarding getting involved with traditional outdoor activities?
You know, it's one of those things that a lot of kids just don't grow up doing, and it's really tough if they don't have a mentor that can take them, you know, and if they have interests that are maybe not really outdoorsy to begin with. It really creates kind of a situation where all we got to do as adults is give them as many opportunities as we can. And, you know, if we're going out, make sure we ask and say, hey, would you like to come with me? You know, just walk through the woods. There's things to see. You know, that doesn't have to be about shooting anything or catching a fish or anything, but just getting outdoors in general is, you know, it's good for the soul.
John, tell us about your book.
It's called Evergreens, and Islandport Press is publishing that. It's coming out October 22nd. We're having a launch party. Matt Dunlap is going to be our facilitator for that storytelling session on a Tuesday night. We're doing it in downtown Bangor. It's a collection of some of my favorites over the last 17 years, and they are truly evergreens. They're columns and stories I've written that really kind of stand the test of time. They're not really deadline conscious or time period conscious. Some make you laugh, some make you cry. They're just a bunch of good tales, I hope.
Matt?
Well, John has been fun to watch and read his columns over the last however many years, because, you know, John and I were on the track team at the University of Maine together. And he started out as a sports writer for the BDN and then took over the outdoor beat. And his adventures have been really fun to follow. And it follows this very trajectory of people who maybe didn't have a lot of exposure to the outdoors. And reading his columns as he had as he goes through his own adventures, I think it's really inspiring for a lot of people who wonder if they can do it to maybe follow in his footsteps.
Well, John, thanks so much for calling in. Good luck with the book. John Holyoke writes about the outdoors for the Bangor Daily News. I have an email from Rachel. I am a wildlife rehabilitator in Maine. I love its wildlife and all that wild Maine offers. Are there programs being implemented that can involve kids in the outdoors that don't involve hunting and killing wildlife? Perhaps our youth's increased awareness of conservation and caring for the world is also contributing to a decline in hunting and fishing, rock climbing, hiking, identifying mushrooms and trees, etc.
Yeah, so the conservation camp does have elements of that, of being able to identify different plants and species and interacting with nature that doesn't necessarily involve hunting. But hunting is part of the culture here in Maine. And so we do encourage kids to try and get out there and participate like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to emphasize that hunting is not about killing an animal. It's about a whole suite of skills that you learn that embrace all the things that she's talking about. And the wildlife rehabilitation part of that is something, too, that the kids at the club get exposed to, because we have folks from Avian Haven who've come out there before, Hirundo Wildlife Refuge. There's a lot more to it, to the outdoors, than just one element, like taking a kid deer hunting, for example. But there's a whole bunch of skills that go into that, and I think that there's a lot more that can be brought in.
Okay, we'll go to Emily calling from Poland. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hey there. I just wanted to let listeners know that I'm part of a forest play group. Ours is in the greater LA area, but I believe Portland has one also. We meet Friday mornings at 9:30 in all sorts of different places, and you can find our group on Facebook to figure out where we're going to be.
I think that's awesome. And one of the things that is, as people hear this program and think about what Emily's been working on, and also what all these folks, John and Ron and the rest of them, again, it's not one person that does all this. When we put together the Youth Fish and Game Club, when people found out what we're doing, we couldn't keep up with the support from the community. The construction companies that came in and did excavation work, the donation of the building, the electricians union and the plumbers union doing all the plumbing and electrical work for us. If you are interested in doing something with kids in the outdoors, there's a whole block of community support that's just waiting to spring into action to help you.
Emily, thanks for your call. We'll go to Maddie calling from Freeport. Hi, Maddie. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to speak to the parents. As a parent myself, I have a 21-year-old and a 16-year-old who have spent their summers in immersive wilderness canoeing programs. Sometimes I think a barrier is parents who are reluctant to say goodbye to their children for a long period of time, especially in the summers and especially in a place like Maine where we have so many fun family things to do. But it's such a wonderful thing to begin to learn ourselves to let our kids go, because when they do go, as Matt was saying earlier, they find themselves connected to nature in a really profound way, and also connected to other human beings in a way that they're not going to necessarily experience during the school day or on an athletic team. And it's such a life-changing proposition. I'm so grateful that I listened to my first child, who really wanted to get out in nature, and then his sister, who followed in his footsteps. So parents, let him go.
Maddie, thanks for your call. And Katie, your response?
I wasn't quite, 16, but one of my very first jobs out of college, I was young, was as a park ranger at the National Park Service. And it was very hard for my parents. I'm an only child. To let me go all the way out to West Texas and work in 46,000 acres of wilderness as a park ranger. But it was a fabulous experience being out in nature. It teaches being out in nature as a young person. When I was a kid, I was part of outdoor clubs. You get out there, rock climbing, hiking, exploring, problem solving skills, confidence. It teaches you to be self-reliant. And all of those skills have crossed over into, my adult life, my career, my personal life. It's a fabulous thing to give a young person that skill set.
All right, Maddie, thanks for your call. We'll go to John calling from Jefferson. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Okay. Thank you. I'm on the down over near Damariscotta Lake, and I want to make a few comments about that. But first, I want to tell you about an amazing book that's exactly on this topic by a man named Richard Louv, L-O-U-V, called Last Child in the Woods, and he calls it the nature deficit disorder.
Sure, John. We've had him on Maine Calling.
Okay, you know about it already.
But thank you for reminding us. It's been a while, and we're going to have him on the show again soon.
Good, good. But I want to say, well, my own experience was growing up here on the edge of Damariscotta Lake, where I'm pacing in the backyard of the house without looking at it. And I fished there. I learned fishing from my folks before we moved to Jefferson, way back in the 40s in California. And then I'm the only one of the four brothers that really fished, and I still do. And I noticed that when I was there in the 50s, there were no largemouth bass. There were just smallmouth, but there were plenty of pickerel. But since the largemouth got introduced somehow, we don't know how, pickerel seem to be driven out of the weed beds, and there are much fewer of them and more of the largemouth. And since I guess that's the main thing I wanted to mention, but also I've noticed, of course, there's been mentioning by others a lot fewer birds. We used to have pheasants and partridges and robins. Well, because we still have robins, but we had orioles and a lot of songbirds, and we just don't anymore. We got turkeys instead.
John, thanks for your call.
Well, I think one of the things he brings up without saying it is that one of the things that you get from the outdoors is the power of observation. And there's a column in the Bar Harbor Times when I was a kid. I used to read it all the time. It's called The Junior Naturalist. And basically how to make these types of observations and understand what they mean over the course of a long time. And things have changed in our ecology since the glaciers melted away. And it's actually gratifying unto itself to keep track of what you see. I know a lot of birders can attest to that. And I've worked with a lot of great birders along that line, but also fishermen who keep track of what they catch and how the ecology of the water systems also changes. And that's something that helps people who keep track of that help the department and as they form policies and programs for kids and others.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call, John. We'll go to another John calling from Cumberland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. I just want to remind everybody about the ecology school, which is being built in Saco. We're building a whole new school campus, which will be based on environmental education, farming skills, sustainable living. We'll be teaching the love of nature and the natural world and the love of outdoors for middle school and high school aged students who will be staying with us for week-long sessions. The campus is currently under construction, but we are holding our teaching sessions up at the Poland Spring Resort while we are in transition to our new campus at Riverbend Farm in Saco. And our website is theecologyschool.org, and I hope people who are interested will take a look.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, John. I appreciate that. I'm going to read a couple emails, if I can find them, right away here. We've got so many coming in that kind of go together in a way.
Well, while you do that, I think it's also important to talk about a couple of websites, maine.gov/IFW, which is the Fish and Wildlife website. And people who are interested in what we're doing at the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association can check out Maine Youth Fish and Game, all one word, maineyouthfishandgame.org.
Okay, so these two. This email is from Michael. The blood sports of hunting and fishing are declining because people have realized these activities involve immense cruelty to animals and are tantamount to animal abuse. Capture the outdoor wildlife with a camera on a beautiful trail instead. And then, from William, George Smith raised an interesting point about the difference in perception of hunting and shooting sports from when he grew up to now. What can be done to improve what I see is a negative public image of these sports? Is this just a contradiction that exists in today's culture and there's not much to say? Or do you have something to add to that as a former vegetarian, Katie?
Well, there was a recent study done that concluded that, attitudes about wildlife are shifting and changing in America. We have a different perception than we did, 20, 30 years ago even. I understand that mindset. I was a vegetarian, and I had a complex relationship with hunting. I did have family members who were hunters, and it was always just something that kind of, I think, I was afraid of, and I didn't like the idea of an animal suffering. But now I eat meat, and I feel I should be responsible for the animals that I eat. I want to be responsible for my impact on the world. So I try to eat food that I've gardened. I try to raise my own chickens, and I've tried hunting, but unsuccessfully this past spring for the first time. But I think it's important that I understand that, you know, I'm not, when I buy something in the grocery store, I'm disconnected from that whole process. And I don't think any hunter or any hunter I know wants to go out there and just, you know, that's not their motivation is more to be, you know, tapped back into nature and be part of that process.
I think that's it's an incredibly important statement to make, because I think, you know, those of us in the sporting community understand that, you know, hunting's not for everybody. Not everybody should be a hunter. It's not really their cup of tea. But as sportsmen, we have an affirmative responsibility to the ecology, to conservation, and to the community to make sure that we do it legally, that we do it right, we do it ethically and morally. And that's what I think when we talk about, you know, youth and the outdoors, those are the types of values that we really try to convey to them. And, you know, having that sense of responsibility makes them better stewards of conservation.
I want to tweet from Jim. Love the work of the men and women of the Maine Warden Service, calm and collected. Might we require all potential law enforcement officers to do a 6-month internship with wardens? An interesting suggestion.
I think it's the greatest conservation law organization in the United States, and we're lucky to have them.
All right. So we're going to try to squeeze in one more. Karen, we're really close to the end of the program, so if you could be quick. This is Karen from Cape Elizabeth.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I think the ethics and morality of having children and women of childbearing age shooting animals with lead-based ammunition is an ignored issue, and it's tremendously important for people to know that women of childbearing age and children ages 6 years old and under should not be eating any firearm killed meat.
Sure, thank you. You want to respond, Katie?
That's something that the department is working towards educating people on. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, lead, it does occur in nature, but we also understand that it's not, like, we don't allow lead shot over water for waterfowl, for example, for that very reason, how it impacts waterfowl. So I think that, you know, these are changing technologies that as sportsmen we embrace.
All right, Karen, thank you for your call. We'll just end with a Facebook post from Nicholas. Not big on hunting, but camping, hiking, fishing, and just being in the wilderness brings us closer together as a family. Going back many generations in Maine, our family passes these values onward. So nods from our guests in the studio. Thank you both for a very popular program. Katie Yates, Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Matt Dunlap, founder of the Maine Youth Fish and Game Association, also Maine Secretary of State. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as all sorts of links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.